Hello, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome to the Coin Plus podcast. We talk about fintech, crypto, trading, and everything blockchain. Today, we're talking about PROG, P-O-W, and what it means for crypto. We're talking with Josh from Easy Crypto Hunter UK. He's the UK's leading crypto mining expert. The company was built to help investors with no prior knowledge in the sector, to give them not only industry-leading support at every step of the way, but also guide the investor on why mining rigs create such a great investment opportunity. Alongside this, Josh consults and advises some of the biggest names in the cryptocurrency industry, including conferences all over the UK and Europe, and even Parliament as well. Josh Ritter, he's the founder of Easy Crypto Hunter. I said he's one of the UK's highest rated crypto mining experts. And Josh, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for coming
on. No, thanks very much, Jeff. It's a pleasure to catch up with you finally. And yeah, looking forward to it.
Well, it's good to finally get back onto a video and not just on texting. We used to bump each other on shows all the time when you were down in London, or I managed to get up to Manchester. We don't have that luxury at the moment, being September, October 2020. We're still in kind of peak.
Peak lockdown, yeah. The world's a strange place.
It is a strange place. And I suppose, yeah, just to kick off, let's talk about your story just really, really quick before we get specifically into kind of crypto mining. Is what originally, you know, got you started in crypto? What was the passion and what was the light bulb moment that really said, you know, this is for me, I'm going to push my chips all in, and crypto mining is what I really want to get into?
So, I mean, I kind of went to, this, you know, we kind of go back as far as you want, really, I guess, but I kind of went, it was probably, I mean, I entered the space in 2013, 2014, so fairly early on, and I was still at university at the time, and whilst I was at university, I ran the Entrepreneurship Society, so I was always quite academically minded, you know, did pretty well at school, but once I went to university, I was lucky to go to, you know, Lancaster University, a really great academic university, big business school there. But it became clear that trying to study business at a university is, you know, the practical implications of that are not necessarily as tangible as maths or physics, right? So ultimately, I spent a lot of time there doing extracurricular stuff, ran the Entrepreneurial Society there, which was something that I put a lot of time and effort into. So in my kind of role as president of that big society there, I felt very passionate about trying to educate the students about what opportunities are going to be in the future moving forward, because I was, you know, very, I guess, quite forward thinking. And one of the things that I came across upon that research was this whole Bitcoin, blockchain and crypto thing. And, you know, none of us had any money because we were students. So my first dib into this world was I did my research about it, knew a little bit more than, well, I guess, than most people back in 2013, 14. And I remember putting up posters all around the campus of the university, as you know, I could get away with it as a president of the society. And I put all these posters up somewhere, and I basically said, hey, everyone, come to this lecture theater on Thursday night, 7 o'clock. I'm going to tell you all about this amazing thing called Bitcoin, and I think it's going to make you all loads of money. So that was back in 2013. And, you know, there was, you know, good few people came, thankfully. And my kind of pitch there, as it were, was this was just as the first kind of ASIC miners for Bitcoin were coming on the scene. So my kind of logic at that point was, why buy something if I can make something myself? So getting into the whole mining kind of thing. So this was before pretty much all the alts, before any of that kind of business. And I just thought, well, you know, my search of too many late nights on YouTube has led me to the point where earning money from, you know, while you sleep, or passive income, as it's, you know, commonly called, is a really smooth way to move forward. This online digital money thing sounds great. So it turns out there's these machines you can buy, you plug them in and they pay you every day. Well, that sounds too good to be true. Surely that can't be a real thing. Mm. And then once I found it was, obviously I became very passionate about that and roped together a few of my friends to put in a couple of £100 each to buy the first ASIC miner from China. And the long and short of it is that didn't end up working out for many different reasons. Everyone got the money back and it was all fine. But that kind of wet my taste buds, as it were, for this whole kind of blockchain and crypto space. And the kind of mining seed was born. And then over the next few years, once the altcoin market started booming, all of a sudden, instead of designing custom chips like the ASIC manufacturers, the GPU side opened up. And that's kind of where we find ourselves today.
And I suppose just keying on that really, really quickly, and I know this is kind of one of your main selling points, and, you know, I don't want to drum it to death, but I mean, GPU versus ASIC, you know, you've got a sunk hardware cost on both of them. I mean, let's be fair. But when it comes to pure utility, and especially, we're probably going to get more in depth with this as we go through the podcast, but essentially it's an ASIC. It's good until the next one comes out.
Whereas
a GPU miner, you can tweak and tune and have a huge range of selection. Just kind of tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I mean, in very simple terms, one's a sledgehammer until a bigger sledgehammer comes out 3 months later. And one of them's a Swiss Army knife that will last you a good long time. It is really a good metaphorical difference. And what a lot of people don't realize is, look, I love Bitcoin. It's an incredible thing. I don't not want to have it. But what people fail to understand, even people very deep in the crypto space, is that often the best way to get more Bitcoin is not to mine Bitcoin directly. Why mine $2 a day of Bitcoin if I can mine $10 a day of Ravencoin and all the cryptos are interchangeable? So I set up the business with an ROI-focused mechanism in place. And what a lot of other people don't realize is, because an ASIC machine is just a specific machine that's just made to do one thing and one thing only, obviously once it's out of date, it carries no resale value. You know, the GPUs you can see behind me, even in 3 or 4 years' time, the retention of those assets will still be worth a really decent chunk of change. Mm. You know, our first generation of equipment now, each card's still worth £400 or £500 3 or 4 years later, because we only use top-end premium components. So financial outlay becomes very different, the retention of asset value becomes very different, notwithstanding the fact that instead of betting on one coin with an ASIC machine, a blockchain server, you know, a GPU mining rig, it's kind of like, instead of backing one horse, you're buying the whole race course. So I don't really care which coin wins, because I know we've got the flexibility to be able to move to it. And a combination of those reasons are often overlooked by even people that are very much in the space, because people get very, you know, everyone's getting to crypto mining, everyone just jumps to Bitcoin. And then because these new machines come out so quickly, and just to give, you know, the listeners and the viewers some kind of context to that, the S9 ASIC miner is the most popular Bitcoin miner in the world, or certainly was for a good period of time. That's 13.5 terahash. Now we have the S19 Pro, which is 110 to 130 megahash if you do a bit of tweaking. So in a 2.5 year technical year life cycle, we've got pretty much, you know, 10 times performance increase in hardware versus the top end graphics card for mining, you know, a 1080 Ti, or now the 2080 Supers, which we now equivalently use, again, 2.5, 3 year life cycle between them, is only really a 15 to 20% performance increase difference. So what you end up with is a product which has a much longer shelf life. So, you know, clients that were still using the first equipment actually, you know, are still doing just fine. Versus it's not like a new machine's come out that's 3 or 4 times better overnight. So the value proposition is much more nuanced, you know, and it's just that GPU mining, because there's so many more options and there's a little bit more involved, yes, it is a bit more complicated, which is ultimately why I founded the company, where you know, most of my clients might be property investors or farmers or business owners who are interested in crypto, but don't pretend to want to become crypto experts overnight. They want to buy something, plug it in, turn it on, forget about it, crack on with their day. And that's the unique option which we've been able to put forward, where you don't need to be a super nerd and coding and programming and languages. And, you know, we've boiled everything down to copy, paste, plug it in, turn it on. And that's kind of one of the reasons why we've been able to grow as we've done, because we've opened up the more complex, nuanced, more profitable, more traditional investor-based equation to the crypto space, but reduced all the technical barriers that kind of stop people getting there.
When we start talking about ROI model, we're talking about investment and return on investment.
Yeah.
You're talking about an outlay of hardware instead of an outlay of time, which can be very attractive to, you know, the right crowd and the right audience. So you talk about your, like you say, your property investors, your business owners, and your farmers. Now, are they traditionally, and this is probably just more on the clientele side to trying to get everyone kind of inclusive about this, but I mean, is that really targeted at people that have additional capital to outlay because of a tax incentive?
Yeah.
Or they've got additional outlay because there's a, not a tax incentive, but they've got a genuine interest to be a part of this network. Do you find that there's both, or is it one or the other?
It's very much both, and it certainly grows. So, you know, I'll be very, you know, honest about it. There's plenty of my clients who don't really care that much, just want to make a really nice return on their income. Fine, that's where people start. You know, I think it would be naive to suggest a lot of people that are now, you know, professionals in the crypto space weren't in it because there was a financial opportunity attached to it, of course. But, you know, what we see very quickly is that because, you know, we have the luxury of working with business owners who are, you know, generally more educated than the average person on the street about money, economies, governments, how all these things intertwine a little bit more so, monetary policy, fractional reserve banking, you know, you can kind of go down the rabbit hole a little bit. But when people then start to really understand what blockchain is, the opportunities it creates, what alternate system it's creating, the passion really starts to grow very quickly. And we have people now as a consequence of this. I mean, this is one of the reasons why I'm so happy with the clients that we have and that we work with, is that ultimately I am desperately passionate about getting everyone involved in crypto and blockchain. And I kind of believe that, you know, the best way to disseminate that kind of passion is through getting other people involved who also have their own sphere of influence. So if I bring on a business owner who has an oil company or a shoe shop or a property investor or whatever, you know, many of my clients have now themselves in their own business started accepting crypto payments, you know, start to use different crypto products and services. And ultimately, then their tenants might do, or their clients might do, and it can kind of spiral much faster. So we really, you know, enjoy that. But of course, the beauty of it is with crypto and blockchain is that what we now have is as nuts as it sounds, is a machine that just pays you for being switched on. And that sounds like this made up concept that people struggle to really get their head around. But yet, you know, me and you and, you know, other business owners, you know, anyone that's listening is very familiar with the internet. The internet's been around for a long time. And when you stop and think about that, you know, we just go on Google and do a search, but you don't conceptually think about the miles and miles of warehouses that they've got, which spin up the computer servers to make that happen. So exactly. If you're a business owner, you have to pay a web hosting fee. So every month you're paying for what? You're renting posh computer power. So it turns out whoever owns those computers for your website is earning passive income every month from turning them on. It's the same thing. It's just that the service being provided is different.
It's where it's been commoditized and I suppose branded. Right. And I think that's what we all kind of take for granted now, even when it comes to, you know, something as simple as receiving a payment using a banking account.
Right.
We've got it on our mobile phones now. You can sign up with a bank account in minutes with some of the neobanks and the, you know, the existing banking infrastructure, which some of them are still based on, require you to go to branch. And it's, you know, that, let's say, that concept of being switched on. Being in the know doesn't necessarily mean other people need to miss out. It's just getting that eye-opening moment and getting that that snowballing effect and getting everyone else involved. Right?
That's exactly it, yeah.
And there's obviously, there's probably just something, one of my own questions, I suppose, and this is my naivety in the space and where I need more educating. But there's a lot of debate around energy consumption versus income, or energy consumption specifically around the Bitcoin chain.
Yes.
And this argument has kind of been done to death, to be honest. It uses more energy than Switzerland. I'm like, well, Switzerland isn't that big of a country. I've been there. but I mean, if we're going to go, you know, let's call an apple an apple, an orange, energy consumption debate versus something like the existing financial system. Do you think that's a healthier debate that should be brought forward?
Yeah, I think it's so here's the thing. No one is bashing Elon Musk over the head because he's mining lithium for electric cars. Everyone goes, electric cars are the future. Good thing, Elon. And unfortunately, because people are naively educated about the blockchain space, they don't understand that it has the possibilities to remove the vast majority of all third-party intermediaries. So what the technology that we're building, okay, yes, it takes energy to build in the first instance, of course. You know, no one complains about the power usage of the internet, but here we are, you know, sitting away having a nice chat on it. Similarly, what people don't, because people don't understand what blockchain is, they don't understand its utility. Everyone just thinks it's online digital money in Bitcoin. And obviously, you know, there are now hundreds and hundreds of different business applications on the blockchain, and there will be continued to be more to come. So because people don't understand that, they don't understand that the blockchain is going to remove, you know, estate agents or mortgage providers or insurance protocols or all these thousands and different of things. You then can't factor in all the kind of green energy and carbon stuff and pollution elements attached to that as well. So the argument is always very biased, because the person having the argument is usually very ill-informed of what's actually going on the blockchain and what possibilities that technology has in order to reduce things. So that would be the kind of headline. But lower than that, there are companies out there like mine that, again, actually love the fact that this uses loads of power. Why? Because, you know, I'm not a psycho. I don't want the world to burn in flames. Of course, I want the environment to be happy and green, and that's a good thing. But again, people don't understand the realities of the situation. Everybody wants solar panels, wind turbines, hydro facilities, but guess what? They all cost money. And who is going to pay for them? Historically speaking, in the UK at least, the government paid a tariff for every single unit of electric that was generated. This whole big green incentive. So 10 years ago, you could put up a wind turbine and get paid pretty handsomely for it, and it made good financial sense to do so. over the years, that number of the tariff has come down and down and down and down and down up until March this year, where that tariff now stands at zero. So there is no financial incentive at all to go and put in my field solar panels or a wind turbine. It does not exist anymore. So why is anyone going to do it? So here's the thing that people don't realize is in majority of those renewable energy sites, we have a lot of what's either called constrained power, where they're actually producing more power than the grid can even take. So there's literally gigawatts of power just being blown off into space without even ever being used, which people don't realize. So there's a lot of waste power that we can take good advantage of. But more than that, what we've done now here at Easy Crypto is we've been able to set a model precedent. So 18 months ago, I got on my first renewable site, an anaerobic digestion site in Wales. Again, anaerobic digestion, something we don't often talk about as a renewable energy, but they basically take up, it's like a big mechanical stomach, and it takes literally like cow poo and all the waste from different things and gives off methane gas, burn the methane gas in an engine, creates electric. It's one of the best ways to create renewable energy. So I have a mining site now as a business that literally runs on 100% cow poo. I mean, we're literally mining on shit.
is there a pun in there for shitcoin? I don't know.
Well, I mean, you can take it as far as you want, right? But ultimately, that's what's happening. Now, here's the thing that people don't realize is even people that got involved in these type of schemes a few years ago might be earning 6, 7, or 8 pence per kilowatt of power they produce.
Right.
Now, when you crunch the numbers back from last year, one of these devices in 2018 to 2019 earned £7,100 of income. And guess what? They only use 1 kilowatt of power. So when you work out those numbers, that was over 70 pence per kilowatt generated. So if you spent 5 million quid on one of these wind turbines, hydro sites, whatever, I'm saying, look, spend £1 million on crypto equipment. And actually, instead of getting payback for that facility in 12 years, you get your payback in 3 or 4 years. So now the government hasn't got any financial incentive to move things forward because they've decided, you know, they want to save the world, but they're not prepared to pay for it. So my model and my message as a business moving forward, which is where we see a large growth sector, is look, we want to do the world a favor. We need more green energy. But also you as the investor, you need to make money from providing that service for the community. So how about build your solar panels, build your AD site, build your wind turbine, and instead of just not getting any money for it and it therefore not being viable anymore, put on a couple of our machines at whatever scale, spend 20% of the power generated, 30% of the power generated on our machines. That's where you learn your revenue structure, and then pump all the other power into the grid. Happy days, win-win-win. Exactly. So actually, once you understand the nuances of the market, we can actually use crypto as the new financial incentive, independent of government subsidy, independent of any regulations, independent of anyone else, any red tape, plug them in, turn them on, get paid same day. And this is the messaging that people don't often get. So, you know, we're on 23, 24 renewable energy sites now in the UK across all the big elements. And as a consequence of this, the British Hydropower Association have endorsed this as an official product because they've now said this is the most profitable way to monetize power that's being generated. So I want more green energy. That's great for everyone. But often this is an argument people don't understand well enough to be able to see that there's actually really big advantages in this technology moving forward. And it can be used as a positive for the environment rather than a negative.
And because you talk about excess energy as well, I'm not saying everyone go build a wind turbine in their backyard in Battersea in Zone 2, because why not? Is that, you know, 20% of that energy can pay it off in a fraction of the time. It's not taking 100% of the energy, right?
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, of course, if you were just going to use 100% of it, then that wouldn't get us anywhere. But the numbers are so much more profitable than the alternative. You can use a fraction, unfortunately.
Kind of interesting you say that, because I mean, taking my experiences from growing up in Australia and moving over to the UK, and there's obviously big differences there. I mean, where it's a big island versus a small island. But, you know, it's very common for literally every single house in Australia has a solar panel. It's actually, you know, very backwards and quite normal that that's how you generate your hot water. We don't have water pipes everywhere. We don't have hot water systems everywhere. You literally have a tank on your roof and it's connected to a solar panel, and that would generate part of your electricity in your house. Would do your hot water and any other kind of services that needed that kind of energy. But the unique bit thing was is that by default, all of the power meters had the ability to run both forwards and backwards. So during, you know, peak periods in the summer, which is a lot of the time in Australia, especially where I was from, is that we would run pretty much neutral for about 3 to 4 months of the year, and even backwards if we went on holiday. And there was a period, a couple of quarters in a couple of years when I was growing up, exceptionally hot, 40, 42 degrees in the summer. And we actually got a check back from the energy company saying, like,
thank you for
your contribution.
Yeah.
But, you know, that just that little concept on its head there of something that, you know, we've taken for granted as just that's just how it operates in our country.
Mm-hmm.
Could really be adopted in so many more scalable ways in other parts of the world.
Yeah, no, very much so. Yeah.
Talking with, on my last podcast, talking with Minima about, you know, the centralization of a lot of proof of works. The proof of work Bitcoin now is in China, and it's between mm-hmm. 6 and 7 mining pools because they have an edge, because they have not only renewable energy, but cheap and, you know, government subsidized energy that's going to be exceptionally hard to compete with longer term.
Yeah.
Now, if there are other chains and other ways to make an income from not just green energy, but any excess energy, like you say, these sites that generate massive amount of electricity and it's essentially going to waste, then there are many other, you know, financial methods that could support things like, you know, charitable donations. It could support, you know, universal income. It starts to expand that narrative so much further out of just a return on investment.
Yeah, people don't realize this. So obviously, if we delve quite deep into the energy market, I mean, there's literally a thing called a dump box. And it, sometimes it'll find itself on huge wind turbine installs, and they basically bury a container in the ground, and it's just full of copper wire, and they generate too much power. You can't feed it to the grid because of X, Y, Z reason, and they just go boof and just zing away the power into space. And I mean, this happens so much more than people realize. And again, the reason is because it's more expensive to move that amount of power than to use it. So why not put on a container of equipment like this and use it? Or what about where they're doing all these oil gas exploration places all around, you know, Australia and different countries, the shale gas, where they have to consistently burn the gas to release the pressure.
It's too expensive to store.
So all of a sudden you can put a generator on and then profit, you know, monetize these options and do this thing. So we've actually got an inquiry at the moment that we're working with quite strongly, which is for a 1 megawatt wind turbine site in Scotland.
Wow.
And they want to not connect to the grid. What their model is because it would cost such a lot of money to move that power to the grid, you know, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of pounds. They've worked out it's actually cheaper to monetize that on site through different financial mechanisms, such as, you know, data centers, crypto mining, And they're going to create their own little ecosystem of, you know, external utility in that location, you know, which obviously we're gonna factor in. So, you know, there's different models moving forward, because, you know, these things need to happen. So again, you know, pulling the argument back to the more general, when everyone has this misconception, oh, it uses so much power, this is all in terms of Bitcoin mining. And it's because the technology moves on so quickly, the only way people are deemed to be able to compete is by having the lowest power costs. If we didn't have machines which, you know, accelerated at the pace that they do because of the ASIC chips, we wouldn't be quite such an issue. So again, you know, one of these GPU machines behind me runs at 1 kilowatt. You know, some of the top end Bitcoin mining machines now are above 2-2.5 kilowatt for some of the top models. So ultimately, the places that have the cheapest power always end up winning out. But so many times, you know, we've seen this, and people then take that misconception and apply it to our equipment and go, oh, the electric's too expensive, I can't use it. Well, most of my clients, even the stuff behind me, it's running on normal grid electric. It's still vastly profitable because GPU mining is just vastly more profitable than Bitcoin mining. If I had an ASIC miner behind me, one, he couldn't hear me, two, it would be blowing my face off. And three, it would have earned, you know, 1/10 of what that unit will today.
Yeah.
And yes, that kit costs more. There's no getting away from it. It's top-end kit, and it costs, you know, multiple times more than an ASIC machine. But ultimately, when you're talking about business investments and you're talking about ROI, sometimes you've got to spend more to make more. That's just the way it works. But if you do it sensibly, you end up with a much better value proposition overall. Notwithstanding the tax benefits that come from buying posh computer equipment, because you can do deep learning, artificial intelligence, you know, all sorts of different things on this device. It's basically just a posh mini supercomputer. It's taxed very differently in the UK as well. So there are a whole myriad of different business advantages that you don't have the advantage of for purchasing ASIC equipment. So again, it's a much more interesting conversation than people often realize.
And I mean, at the moment, with this conversation we're having is very swayed towards, I say, proof of work.
Yes.
What's your kind of opinion on sort of proof of stake, specifically towards like Ethereum and what we're going to see over the next kind of few months?
So this is, again, Ethereum is the big one. So what's really interesting is that the other than Ethereum, there aren't really any coins of note that were proof of work that are choosing to become proof of stake. Ethereum's kind of the head above the parapet. But again, we only have to look at the timeline. And now I think we're coming up to 2 years over delay on moving from proof of work to proof of stake. And in all honesty, it's probably going to be another 2 years, 3 years minimum. But between what happens between now and then, it's looking like we might even get progressive proof of work. We might even change the mining algorithm. Because, you know, this is Ethereum have kind of made a bit of a boo-boo here because they announced that they were going to move to proof of stake. Presumed they could do that much faster than they could. And this wonderful GPU mining community that they built, which was the kind of primary coin of all the altcoins that then followed, they ended up kind of leaving Bitmain enough room to be able to develop an ASIC machine that mines Ethereum. So now, unfortunately, it never should have happened, but the majority of Ethereum is mined on ASIC machines, which is a travesty because it was never really meant to happen. Mm. And Ethereum have kind of let that go along because they're kind of in the back of the head thinking they're going to move to proof of stake really quickly.
Yeah.
They've now realized that's not the case and are now spending an awful lot of time debating moving to progressive proof of work, which is a new mining algorithm, which, without kind of blowing everyone's head technically, basically stretches both the memory and the chip. So if you were to make an ASIC for it, it would look like a GPU.
Yeah.
So it
brings
basically
GPU miners back into the fold.
It brings the GPU miners back into the fold. It's all very community driven and ultimately, you know, decentralization and all this kind of thing. So it's going to be interesting. And ultimately, what will happen, which the Ethereum have already announced, is even when they do move to proof of stake, they're still going to have a hybrid system for a while. Mm. So how long that's going to be, who knows? So
yeah.
I would be very surprised if we're still not mining Ethereum in some form or another for the next 4 or 5 years. And even under those conditions, there's still a whole myriad of brand new coins which choose to be on proof of work because ultimately it increases the utility of what's going on there.
You know, also, it's the value. If it's pre-mined, you know, pre-minted, pre-whatever, there's no established value in the chain. Start from zero,
yeah.
You start from Genesis, you start from zero.
Right.
You know, you're establishing value from the start. Whether it's a new coin, you know, whatever it is, there's always going to be a good argument of having proof of work.
Yeah.
Or co-mining alongside Bitcoin, etc. And I suppose it brings us back to, you know, some of the, I suppose, education and kind of wider real world stuff. Crypto versus fiat. I mean, what we're seeing, not just during the pandemic, just 2020.
Yeah.
In you know, hindsight's a beautiful thing, but 2020 is like literally one of those hold my beer moments and just sit back
yeah.
and watch. It's been an absolutely insane year from March when, you know, the whole market was kind of going sideways and then slipped off a cliff, both traditional markets and crypto, to everyone being in full lockdown, to a lot of traditional businesses that were, you know, top of the game.
Yeah, decimated.
Being absolutely decimated. And I find it quite interesting, you know, not just as a business owner, entrepreneur, that we've actually grown through this period. We have to take on 3 months stuff.
Yeah,
You know, how do you think, what do you think that the traditional world can learn from crypto right now with what we're seeing with, you know, huge amount of quantitative easing and huge amount of money printing in the US and the UK and the stuff that's going on with hyperinflation in some of these other countries? What can the traditional world, I think, learn from crypto?
The lessons are there to be learned. I mean, similar to you, we've taken on multiple more staff here as well. It's been one of our busiest periods. And ultimately, it's really difficult because it's easy for me and you to sit here who, you know, we're lucky that we've kind of have had a natural inquiry to go down this route. And we can sit here and have a very formal discussion about the fractional reserve banking system versus a blockchain ecosystem. But the problem that we have is that financial education, both in the UK and generally across the world, is so poor. Like, if you go and speak to any of your friends or family around the kitchen table and ask them, oh, so what does it mean when we moved away from the gold standard? They have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And this is the big problem with crypto, because people can't grasp the advantages of something that they do not understand the problems with. So, you know, ultimately, until crypto is just so prevalent that people just do it without even realizing it, and it's just the done thing, which, you know, will happen at some point down the line. This is why kind of more general monetary education is just so important, I think, because if you don't understand why it's a problem that America can just print $6 trillion, I think another $2 trillion just last week.
I love how blasé it is when people mention it as well. It's just an unimaginable number. With I wouldn't be able to fit the zeros across this screen.
No.
We'll do another two in a couple of months' time. Not a problem.
Yeah, the problem is people don't have a financial education baseline to be able to understand the potential implications of that. Therefore, they can't see what's problematic with that. Therefore, how are they going to look at an alternative like Bitcoin and crypto and go, oh, that's a better solution, and now I see why. Mm. And that's where it becomes difficult, because, you know, and this is why, thankfully, I feel quite privileged in the way in which I've set my business up, in that, you know, we are generally, we do have plenty of customers that are just individuals, and, you know, we sell one unit as we're happy to sell 100 units, and we support that individual just the same. But the majority of our clients are generally more business focused, and subsequently we can have these higher level conversations with people, and that ultimately instills a real kind of passion for learning about this. And again, I feel that they can then disseminate that information to their employees and so on and so forth. So it's a really difficult thing to be able to wrap our heads around, because you need to know quite a lot before you can then start questioning the world around us.
Yeah.
So I've had many, you know, I've attempted to have many conversations with friends, family, you know, whoever. And it's hard to say, you know, if someone says, well, what is Bitcoin? Why is it so good?
You have to start drawing on examples and to actually get it through. And there's a lot of like, oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. Yeah. And there's a big story to be told before the penny really drops. And then a lot of people simply don't have the time for that. Don't want to know about that. Don't want to take the time to learn, you know, and what I am hoping is that Corona has made it very visible for a lot of people about how fragile things can be.
Yeah.
And particularly, I think what will be the kicker is when we have negative interest rates, which is looking like we're going to have next year in the UK. And once people click, because we've already got negative interest rates in real terms, because inflation's outpacing interest. That's been around for a while, but people don't understand that because the numbers in the bank are still going up.
Yep.
But when we get to a point where you put £10,000 in your bank and you, at the end of the year, it's now 9,900 and something, people are going to start asking questions.
Well, it comes from speed and perception. I mean, you say, we mentioned the gold standard. That was like back in the 70s. That's beyond a lot of yours in my lifetime anyway. The perception of what the world is between then and now probably outweighs more than what did a dollar buy in 1974. That conversation doesn't get enough airtime. And I think with crypto and the volatility, and just like you say, negative interest rates, that's well in the front of your memory lobe of like, well, I put 10k in and now it's worth 20 quid less purely for no other reason, and the bank's not charging it, it's the world charging it basically.
Yeah,
that's when it's going to start the penny drop, because it's so much faster now.
Yeah. And I'm hoping that will kind of be a catalyst. So, you know, all the kind of education and outreach things that we do, you know, I think once that starts happening, people will actively go, well, why does my bank charge me money? And that will force them to do a Google search. And that will force them to understand interest rates. That will force them to understand what happens when you print loads of money. And hopefully that will lead people down the line to, you know, places like my business, your business, where, you know, actually now, obviously, I think, you know, this thing's coming on your platform, maybe of a similar ilk. But now even on some of the big platforms like Binance, you know, you can stake, or, you know, you get paid interest just for holding Tether. You can have a coin that doesn't even change value and get 7-8% a year.
Exactly. There's a new world out there for people.
There's a whole new financial world, and the average person doesn't grasp that. When you're losing money in your bank, why not put it in a crypto coin that doesn't even change value?
Mm.
You know, say what you want about Tether, that's a different story. But the point is there's models out there now where a new financial mechanism is not only existent but maturing very quickly. You can have a crypto.com card or all these different payment cards, and you can literally go to McDonald's and pick up your triple cheeseburger and just go zing, and you can pay in Bitcoin and people don't even know.
Yeah.
This has been around for a while, but the average person doesn't realize this and still thinks it's something, you know, different.
Magic internet money, the meme, right?
Magic internet money. Yeah. So, yeah. You know, breaking through, that's tough, and it's an uphill struggle. And as a leader in the mining things as well, You know, obviously we spend a lot of our time, energy and money on education of people, and we'll take a farmer who, you know, has a cattle farm and milk cows and goes, yeah, I've heard of Bitcoin, don't really know much more than that. And we'll take them through that journey. And at the end of it, they'll be, you know, they'll end up spending decent money with us and they'll be a great client. And then 2 years have gone by and all of a sudden they're now, you know, wanting to use the blockchain to stamp their milk transactions to make sure it gets to the shop on time.
Supply chain logistics.
Mm. Yeah. So, you know, that's what we're really proud to be able to see, but it's hard and it takes a lot of money. I mean, that's the business reality of being the kind of leader of a sector. Mm. It's very expensive for us to go out there and do that, but ultimately it's a love and it's a passion, and we get rewarded with, you know, wonderful clients and a business that's growing and moving forward. And yeah, sure, it's a lot of hard work and I had a lot more hair before I started, but you know what, I'll buy some more with Bitcoin, that'd be fun.
Exactly. I don't think I changed my story whatsoever to get to where we are now. So very cool. And I think that's probably a really good spot to kind of wrap the podcast up today. I know you and I could talk about this topic forever. I think we've had a good spat there with, you know, about Ethereum, about ASICs, about the GPU mining, and about the world, or kind of the way we see it and the way it's going to go forward. We always have to think glass half full instead of half empty. Instead of trying to think about what are the ways we're going to be stopped, or what are the ways it's going to be, you know, sullied and linked to, you know, Bitcoin's used for money laundering. It's the worst money laundering tool there is. In fact, illicit transactions are down like sub 2% now, I think, globally, compared to what it used to be. So that whole narrative, it is changing. And I think for you and me, it's in real time. For anyone else that's not in this ecosystem,
it still takes
a little time. So we have an image problem that we're getting forward, but I know that what you guys are doing down there at Easy Crypto and what we're trying to achieve at CoinPass as well are both working mutually to try and, like you say, better that narrative and educate people on exactly you know, what crypto is and what it is doing, not what it could do in the future, because we are literally already here. So that's really cool. Josh, any last words about what you're doing with Easy Crypto Hunter? What's on the horizon? How people get in touch?
Yeah, no, we've obviously easycryptohunter.co.uk. You can find our, you know, Easy Crypto YouTube channel as well. You know, give us a call. I mean, one of the things that we do here is, look, this magical internet money, you know, I knew that was what people thought this was. So we have open offices. Call us, book an appointment, come and meet the team, see where the kit's built, come and walk out with something the same day. I mean, it's a very honest, you know, hardware business. We sell posh computers, if you want to boil it down to that, and we educate people on the way. So it's, you know, we're passionate about getting average people involved in this that don't need to be crypto experts, similar to what you guys do at CoinPass, getting money in and out the system in a nice, easy, human friendly way, and obviously it's nice to have that mutual synergy there in a lot of the things that we do. So again, you know, thanks for this podcast, Jeff. Again, this is all part of wider education, and hopefully new people will see this. And, you know, it's just a great conversation to get out there. So,
no, thank you again, mate. And if you're listening out there, you want to be a part of the show, you can tweet at us at CoinPass Global. Drop us an email, podcast@coinpass.com. And as always, thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you on the next one. Goodbye.
No problem. Thanks, Jeff.